Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm going to tell you, I can't think of a better way to kick off a fabulous 4th of July weekend than by beginning it with a chat with the pit bull of personal development, Larry Wingate. Larry is a 5-time New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author with titles like, and I love these titles, Larry, You're Broke Because You Want to Be, Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life. It's called Work for a Reason, and Your Success is Your Own Damn Fault. The Idiot Factor, in his most recent bestseller, Your Kids Are Your Own Fault. Larry also regularly appears on Fox News and Fox Business, CNBC, MSNBC, as a financial expert. And I see him regularly on Neil Cavuto. He also has too many other television programs and appearances to chat about here. So you can look for Larry on the web at LarryWingate.com, and you can find out everything you need to know. Today, we are going to be talking about customer service, or more properly, lack of. We both have plenty to say about this topic. So good morning, Larry, and thank you so much for being here on the 4th of July weekend.
I appreciate it. It is the 1st of July, isn't it? It's amazing.
It is.
The year is flying by.
Oh, God, I know. I look up and June is gone, and I really wondered where it went. It's just crazy how fast this year is going. So tell me how everything is in your part of the world. I guess you're having some heat there, huh?
It's hot here. It certainly is. And our forecast for the 4th of July is 117. So it's warm weather here.
Oh, my gosh. It, just the thought of that makes my skin just kind of sizzle up and go.
You know, I'm a big boy. I knew it was going to be that hot when I moved here. And you can always go inside, I guess.
Well, one thing about you're in Arizona, it's at least dry heat, which, you know, is a little bit helpful.
Well, you know, people keep saying that, but my oven is dry heat, too, and I don't live in there either, so.
No. Well, I live in the deep south, and it gets so wet here that you just can't breathe. I'll take dry heat any day of the week.
Full season of my television series, Big Spender, in Miami in July, and 2 hours of the show that we shot was always done inside a car. So we sat inside a car in Miami with a 105 degrees and 105 humidity with no air conditioning every day. So, yeah, I know how that wet, humid heat is.
Yeah, it's really – well, our skin looks good. I will say that. It's hard to get wrinkled down here. We're so plumped up from all the moisture. The last time you were on your Partner in Success Radio, we just talked up a storm, and we never got to what we really wanted to talk about, which was customer service. Well, I've been actually listening to your book on and off for the last couple of weeks. It's called Work for a Reason, and you cover customer service very thoroughly in there, and I'd like to chat about that too. And I have a horror story about Cox and AT&T. And I warned them both that I was going to be talking to you about customer service, and they still didn't fix the problem. So here we go. You know, all bets are off the table now.
You know, that's the one thing. Getting even does feel so good sometimes. And that's really sort of the core of the problem. When people experience bad customer service, they take it. And if when you have a bad customer service experience, and we all have them every single day, and if they're bad ones, we don't forget them. I did an interview not long ago with a person who says, don't you ever get any good service? And I said, well, of course I get good service, but I don't remember that. Right. I said, I'm a typical person who has service, and when they get good service, you go, okay. And when you get bad service, you never forget it, and you can't wait to tell everybody about it. And that's what businesses, I think, forget sometimes. And that's what we as customers forget that we should be doing, is telling everybody about it. But we've kind of become wimps in that area of life, like all areas of life, and we just take it. Complacency is going to be the enemy of good service in the future, because when we don't speak up, don't say anything, don't make an issue of it, we can be expected. Actually, I think we're partners in crime at that point, and we
yeah.
should be expected expecting bad service in the future because we haven't done anything to fix it.
Well, and that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you about. Are we actually guilty of allowing this to happen? Because let me tell you, I do speak up, and you don't have to get nasty. You don't have to raise your voice. You don't have to make a scene. But when you are experiencing, you know, really lousy customer service and you're paying for it, say something. And people do it all the time.
That makes you the exception, not the rule. Most people quietly just take it. Especially in a service industry like going to a restaurant and so forth. They'll go, well, that was horrible. They didn't go ahead and leave the tip. And so that they're actually rewarding the customer service beyond, above and beyond just paying for the service. And then they walk out and say, well, we just won't come back here anymore. There.
Right.
They feel good about themselves. We won't come back here anymore. Well, you didn't fix a thing. What you should have done is politely ask for the person in charge, and like you said, be nice. I speak up to everybody, but I'm nice about it, and I explain it. Now, most of them don't get it, sadly. They don't. And it doesn't do any good to complain to the server who is delivering the bad service. You've got to go to the boss. So, and people just don't have the guts to do those things anymore. But you ask, are we guilty? Absolutely, we are guilty. I believe you treat people, people treat you the way you teach them to treat you. And when you allow people to treat you badly and you do nothing about them, you've taught them, you've condoned that treatment of you. And when you change that and teach people that they must treat you well, that you expect to be treated well, and you will respond in a really favorable way when they treat you well, they'll treat you that way too.
Exactly. One thing that I'm really concerned about, and we have touched on this topic in the past, is that we have a lot of young Americans, youth, if you want to call them that, who are growing up. They're going into customer service because, you know, by and large, they either can't find a job that fits their perceived career path, or that's really all that's available to them. And I'm seeing more and more, and I don't shop a whole lot, but when I do, I'm really noticing how really awful the customer service is at the hands of these very young people. They're sullen. They're non-communicative. They don't make eye contact. They can barely mumble. I had an experience probably a couple of months ago, and it really bothered me. I went into just a dollar store. I love dollar stores. You can buy your laundry detergent fairly cheaply there. So I went in, and you know, I said hello to the girl when I came in. She didn't respond. I thought, well, maybe she didn't hear me. When I got up to the check stand, I said hello again. She didn't respond, didn't look at me. I was invisible to this girl. She starts grabbing my groceries, slinging them around. At one point, I had to ask her to stop slinging my stuff around. She, again, never looked at me, never made eye contact. I was still invisible. When I went to hand her my credit card, she snatched it out of my hand. So I reached across and I snatched it back. And that's when we started the rumble. I said, I need to see your supervisor. Well, who is my supervisor? Who do you ask for a day off? Go get that person. And I made her stop right then, right there, and go get somebody who could explain to me why it was okay to be treated like that when I was paying to be treated like that. The upshot of it was she was fired 2 days later because apparently I wasn't the only one that had kind of made noise about her. But I walked out You know, the manager said, well, you know, I can go ahead and take care of you over here. I said, no, I won't spend money in here. I'm done. Until you can fix your customer service problems, I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I wasn't
Well, that's
I
what
was
more
nasty,
people
I
need
to
do,
to
but it's
it.
An inconvenience for them. They go, well, if I make a ruckus in here, then they won't like me when I come back in here.
No, I don't care.
And I don't care either. But you know, the problem you're talking about young people, and I don't blame it off. I just won't lay the blame just on young people, because they have a boss when they go to work, and it is the boss's responsibility to sit down and explain the expectation level mm-hmm. of that boss and that company and that organization that we treat people well. So, yeah, it starts with mom and daddy didn't treat that person how to respond and interact with other people in a polite manner. It starts there, but once they go to work and that person has a supervisor, that supervisor, it's their responsibility to make sure that they're delivering the good customer service. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to just lay it off on the newbies and the new hires and the 20-somethings out there who are delivering the bad service. And besides that, I get a lot of bad service from a lot of crusty old people, too. There are a lot of those people out there who are just too mean and too old and know they've got tenure and they don't bother. I mean, airlines are the worst. Flight attendants are terrible. And the ones that are the worst are the ones with 30-year service who have butts that they have to turn sideways to get down the aisle. And they become complacent and lost their energy and treat you like you're anything but a customer. So I'm not going to just lay it off on young people or old people. It's more than just an age issue. It's an issue of the fact that they're not required to care. Nobody's teaching them to care very much about the customer. Nobody's explained, really, that the customer is the ultimate boss. It's their money. I heard an old tape years ago by Earl Nightingale that said, all the money you're ever going to have is currently in the hands of someone else. I thought that was so profound. And we don't teach people that if we didn't have customers, we wouldn't be in business. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
And businesses have not communicated that to every single employee. You ask the average janitor about customer service, and he says, I'm not into customer service. I clean toilets. Well, that's customer service. Because mm-hmm. if the customer thinks the toilets are dirty, they're not coming back. So every single person in the business has to be trained and has to be made aware that what they do does have direct impact on every customer that calls or walks in the door or however you do business.
I think what I don't understand, and I agree with you 100%, because if management is not communicating to, you know, their customers through their employees that they really care, they do want you there as a customer, there's a big issue, and it's endemic. It's the whole store. Might be the whole entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't understand, Larry, is that, and maybe it's a common sense issue, why do people think if they're in a customer service position, and we all are, in your book you say everybody has a boss. We all have a boss. I have several because I work for many, many clients. My biggest boss is me, and I'm tough on me. Let me tell you,
yeah.
I'm tough on me. But I don't understand why people don't just have the common courtesy to behave properly. It can be very much just a common courtesy issue. And I'm
that goes back to my parenting
courtesy.
Book. That's a mom and daddy
Does
issue.
It?
Mom and daddy
okay.
should have taught people just to treat others well, period.
Right.
And that's where it really starts, and that's where it's lacking the most.
Mm-mm. Well, how do companies, small businesses, how do bosses, let's just make them a generic term, bosses, what are some steps that they should take to communicate to their employees, their contractors, whoever it is that's working with them, for them, under them? What should they do? What are the steps that they should take?
Well, it does come down to making sure that everybody who works in your organization understands why the business exists to begin with. Now, everybody thinks they've got that one, and I've got that one. I know why we exist. But the reason a business exists is a very simple thing. It exists to be profitable, period.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work for a company and think that business exists to make you, the employee, happy, you're an idiot. Businesses don't exist to make employees happy, and if they do, and if that's their main concern, they go out of business. Businesses exist to be profitable, and the way you become profitable is by serving customers well. It's a very, very simple process that we don't teach people. And when every employee knows, listen, we're just here to make money, and the way we make money is to make customers happy. That's it. And I have a role in doing that. And that's really the part that I was mentioning earlier, is that we haven't communicated to the employees at every level, regardless of what they do for the company, that they have a role in making sure the customer is satisfied, from the janitor to the mail clerk to everybody. Everybody. The guy that washes the windows outside. Everybody has a role in treating the customer well. And when you communicate that and then enforce it and then impose consequences when it doesn't happen, that's when you can sort of change the culture. We've created a culture, and it's truly a cultural problem, that we live in a society based on entitlement, and we are all entitled to be treated perfectly. No, we're entitled to be treated based on our performance when we have a job. And so if you perform well, you get to keep your job. If you don't perform well, you lose your job. But the sense of entitlement says it doesn't matter what I do here at work. It doesn't matter how bad I treat a customer. I'm a wonderful person, and I have to be treated like that all the time. It's a mistake.
Right.
We have to remind people we exist to be profitable. The way we're profitable is to treat customers well, because if we treat customers well, they'll come here, they'll tell others, they'll share their money with us, they'll spend more. And the more times they share their money and spend money with us, the more likely we are to stay in business, which means we can keep more of you employed. It's a very simple process, but something I think we're lacking in business today.
I think so. And let's face it, we are a litigious country these days.
Yep.
And I have heard people say, well, you fire me, I'll sue you. My attitude is sue me. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, in my book I talk about it's easier to fight an idiot on the outside than from the inside.
Yeah.
Which means go out there and get your attorney. That's fine. I'm sure you can find an attorney that's low life enough to take any case in the world. That's fine. I'll still be better off with you suing me than I will with you working here in my organization and destroying the morale and destroying my customer base.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when we get down to the kind of the lower echelons, I'm hearing this from people who have very small businesses, and they're saying, we just can't find people who will work. They'll show up for a week, they'll get their paycheck on Friday. We never see them again. And it's down here in the
I hear that so much you would not believe from small business owners and from big businesses, too. I have a friend who's the manager of the shoe department at Nordstrom's, and she says, we can't find people to work here. And I go, really? Can't find people to work in a Nordstrom's when selling shoes?
It's
I mean,
air-conditioned.
Like I said, it's 117 degrees here.
I work there. It's air-conditioned.
I know. It's air-conditioned. You deal with beautiful people
and shoes.
Beautiful shoes here, which, you know, I'm kind of a shoe guy anyway. So.
Yeah, I know.
And she said, yeah, they'll, she related a story about where she had hired this early 20s guy, and he came to work, and that day did pretty good. The second day he went to lunch and then didn't come back from lunch. 2 days later he showed up and just was acting like everything was fine. And she talked to him, and he said, what's the problem? He goes, what's the problem? You went to lunch and didn't come back for 2 days. And he said, you mean I have to be here all the time? And he says, I'm not going to be here all the time. And he didn't even comprehend the idea of the dailiness of the job and a schedule and hours and all of that. And he said, well, I'll go back to work now, and I guess I get it. She said, no, you don't have a job now. But you're right, they can't find people who work for them, who will be consistent. And we wonder why we have such a high unemployment rate right now. It's because people aren't willing to work. And I think that's one of the big problems. Companies right now can't find people who are really willing to work. There was a poll this last week that said 50% of the people who are, I thought it was under the age of 35, I may not be getting these exact numbers right, under the age of 35, said they're unhappy with their job and at first opportunity will leave. Okay.
To go do what?
I mean,
do they have a plan?
That's what they don't seem to get. What are they going to leave and go do?
Yeah.
See, if I had an employee that I knew that was her opinion, the first opportunity would be the instant I knew that. Because it's short-timer's attitude. It's like you give your notice and you're still around for 2 weeks. You got short-timer's attitude. You're not real. And that's how we have a lot of people on the job right now with short-timer's attitude. They're just looking for a way to get out and do something else. Well, if I knew that, I'd help them get out and do something else because I want somebody dedicated to the work.
Right. And one thing you talk about in your book that I was listening to today, I tend to put on these audiobooks and I listen to them, and I'm not intently listening, but I'm picking up just gems as I go along because I'm working. I'm in front of my monitor and I'm working. And all of a sudden you'll say something that has me go, what? What was that? And my head will pop up and my keys will, you know, my fingers will poise over my keyboard and I'll have to back up and listen to what you said. And one of the things that you were saying in the part of the book that I was listening to this morning was that, you know, people need to be joyful about, and I'm paraphrasing, they need to be happy about what they're doing. They need to be joyful. They need to go to work every day and really enjoy what they're doing, even if it is just part-time or short-term or really not their career path, but for crying out loud, get out of bed and be happy. And again, I'm paraphrasing.
Well, yeah,
that's
I'm
not
a big
what
believer
you said,
in it. You're being much kinder, I'm sure, in how I probably said that.
Well, that's how I filtered what you said. You know, you have a book review. Larry Winget says, and not a word of it is what you said.
Well, and again, you are being kind. No, I do believe that when you go to work, you have to have the best attitude you can about it. Now, I don't believe you have to love what you do in order to be good at it. There are times when I am on stage or when I'm doing what I do for a living that I absolutely hate it, and that just makes me a real person. I think it's impossible to love what you do all the time. Sometimes what you do, it really is work. That's why the title of my book is it's called Work for a Reason. You don't have to love it all the time, but you have to give it your best effort at least. You can't bring your personal stuff onto the job. I was in a restaurant with a group of people, and we all walked in, and we sat down, and here came the waiter, and he walks over and kind of huffs and puffs, and he says, "All right, I just want you to know right now I'm not having a very good day, so don't expect very good service from me. Now, what can I get you?" I said, "Why don't you get us a new waiter?
A different table, yeah."
And he said,
"Oh,
what?"
My.
I said, "Yeah, you ask what you could get us. I want you to get us a new waiter." Mm-hmm. And he said, "But this is my table." And I said, "See, this is where you're so confused. This is my table. I'm paying for it, and that makes it mine." And so he just kind of stumbles off, and here comes the manager. And the manager said, "What's the problem here?" And I said, "Well, you know, he came over and said that we shouldn't expect good service because he's having a really bad day. And let me just ask you, how stupid would I be to accept bad service when it's been promised to me in advance? Now, wouldn't that be dumb for me to have a guy promise me bad service and me go ahead and stay and accept it? I'm not willing to accept bad service. I'd rather you surprise me with a bad service after I've placed my order." So he said, "So what am I supposed to do?"
Say?
I said, "Get me a new waiter."
Really?
And he
goes,
"Oh."
Ask me what he was supposed to do. Are you kidding?
Yeah. He said, "So what am I supposed to do?" I said, "Get me a new waiter." And he said, "Well, sir, he really is having a bad day." And I go,
"Well, he's about to have
and
a work
why
time.
Am I supposed to know that or care about that? I didn't come here today to interact with him except for him to be nice to me and deliver my food on time. That's why I'm here.
Wow.
I didn't come to be his counselor. I didn't come to experience his bad day. I don't care." And see, that's what we've gotten to the point that we involve customers in a part of the business experience and the personal experience that they don't care about. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go into a restaurant, I don't care what anybody's thinking. I don't care whether they're happy. I don't care whether they've had a bad day or had a flat on the way to work. I don't need to know it. I don't care whether they're having a fight with their husband or their wife or their spouse. I just don't care. It's not my business. That's not why I'm there.
Really?
And we involve customers in the business. Well, you know, the business is really in trouble and we're struggling here. Really? I don't care. I had a flight attendant say, "Well, do you know what we're going through? Do you know all the cutbacks we're going through?" And I go, "What does that have to do with you gave me a cup of coffee?" Nothing.
Yeah.
I don't care about any of this.
Wait, you have to tell me that story. How did that even come into play? Well, let me back up.
The service was really bad on the airplane. Just really, really bad. And the guy next to me, you know, he had asked for a blanket. She said, "We don't have blankets anymore because it was cold on this plane. I could save them some fuel just by warming them up a little bit." And she said, "We don't have blankets anymore." And he goes, "Well, you know," and he just kind of laughingly said, "Fees go up, rates go up. Everything goes up. You stay more profitable than ever, and yet customer service goes down." And she's been standing there with my cup of coffee in her hand the whole time they're having this exchange. And then she launches into this entire tirade about how hard they're worked and what they've given up and what they're going through and the attacks that the airline industry is under and how that affects her job, and she hasn't had a week off, and on and on. I said, "Excuse me, why do we care about any of that? We don't care about your fees. We don't care about what you're going through. I care about the fact that you've been standing there for 5 minutes arguing with another customer over my cup of coffee. I don't care. Set the coffee down and then have your argument. How about that? Well, that didn't make service a lot better either, but they think that we care about those things, that a customer should care, and customers don't. Customers want to be served well. They don't care what your company's going through, and they really don't care what you're going through. And so that's why I said, and this is what it all started with, that's why I said, you know, when you go to work, be as happy as you can, at least for that customer experience. Enjoy what you do. It's not required, but it's a nice bonus along the way that if you can figure out a way to enjoy what you do. I don't care if they even make you wear one of those little funny hats as you're serving corn dogs at the mall. Figure out a way to enjoy it as best you can.
Mm-hmm. And you said something so important. It's the customer experience, period. The customer experience is either going to be positive or it's not. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and
now,
if it's
I have
not
to
positive,
ask you,
the customer will never forget it.
No, and you're absolutely right. Did you leave the restaurant? I need to know. I would have left.
No, that got me in. The manager got me a new waiter, and it was an okay experience at that point. But, I mean, they were probably spitting my food in the back there because I was the guy who dared to say anything. And see, that's the problem. I dared to speak up.
Well, you know, Larry, I had something similar happen one time. I was at a chain restaurant, and I don't normally go to chain restaurants. I prefer little mom and pops if I go to a restaurant at all. And it was lunchtime, and there, you know, seating was a little tough, so we sat in the bar where there's no smoking, which is fine, and I don't smoke, so I was happy to sit in the bar. But there was this really loud, really obnoxious businessman sitting at a table with four other people. He was on his cell phone. We heard every bit of that conversation, and he wouldn't ratchet it down at all. And eventually he even put it on speakerphone to, you know, add to the obnoxiousness level. We called the waitress over and said, do you have a policy against it? Well, no. Well, why not? Well, I don't know. Is he bothering you? No, I called you over to ask how your mama is. You know, I mean, it just really, eventually she called over a manager. Was there a problem? And same thing with you. You know, was there a problem? He couldn't understand what the problem was. I could barely hear myself thinking this guy was so loud, but he didn't see what the problem was. He said, well, maybe, you know, if you don't mind waiting, we can put you in a different place in the restaurant part. I said, no, that's okay. We're going to leave. My husband was mortified. I didn't care. I was not going to sit there and be treated like I just didn't matter. Nobody else in the restaurant mattered because this clown wanted to speak at full volume on his cell phone, and nobody would do a darn thing about it.
Well, that happens a lot, and it's I think that, like in that case, that's a managerial problem. That's not a problem with the guy. Guys get on the phone, they get carried away, and people are jerks and idiots and stupid, and they make me mad almost all the time. But it was the responsibility of the manager to do something. I had a similar situation where a family came in, two different families had a bunch of like 3-4-year-old kids, and the instant the kids were finished eating, they just ran rampant through the restaurant, screaming and yelling and between the tables, and it just drove me crazy. And so I went over and spoke to the manager, and I said, you know, somebody's going to have to do something about this. And he said, well, I'm sure when the parents leave, they'll take their kids with them, but they're not finished with their dinner yet. And I said, really, that's your answer? And so all of us come in here, and this is a nice place. We all come in here, and we have to have our meals ruined because they're bad parents. You need to go speak to the table. You need to speak to the parents. You need to get the parents to get their children under control because they're ruining the dining experience for the entire dining room here.
Right.
He said, I can't go tell the parents that. I said, then I can.
Did you?
And so I went over and had a little talk with the parents, and they just thought I was a horrible person, and it was not a pretty experience at all, I can assure you.
No,
but they got their kids under control. And, you know, and on the way back to my table, there all the other diners in the place are saying, thank you so much, thank you so much. And this was a place that had four other locations. And I said, so as I left, so who do I call? Who do you work for? You're the manager. Who do you work for? You've got a boss. And see, that's the part in the book we mentioned earlier. Everybody's got a boss.
Right.
And it doesn't do any good to complain to that manager. He's not going to change. He's not going to do anything about it. But find the boss. Mm-hmm. And make sure they're aware. And be specific. Don't just be this crazy, insane customer. And that's what people think complaining is. It's just you get on this stupid rant and scream and yell and cuss and do all that.
No,
stay calm, write a letter, make a phone call. Express it in writing first is the best way to make sure that the emotion is out and the facts are there. And call it and read it to them if you have to. But always ask for somebody's boss. You do get results when you do that. And if you do it right, you can make a difference.
And here's the thing, Larry. If they are paying attention to their customer base, it's really instructive for them to get this kind of feedback. If you're not getting
companies pay a lot of money for focus groups in order to get the kind of feedback that's available to them right there.
Right, right. And here's the thing. I mean, if you're not getting feedback, and I've heard this time and time again, well, nobody says anything. Yeah, but did you ever see them again? Are you paying attention to whether you have regular clients or regular customers or, you know, are you really paying attention or are you just looking at the till? Oh, look, we made our quota today.
Yeah.
And how many people did you run off that day? And I think that's the more important number. How many people actively turn away? And
I think another aspect of customer service that we don't talk about, and it's because people don't realize, is when customer service is too good. Have you ever had that experience where somebody hovered so much, they were so attentive, an employee, they were just, that they went beyond customer service and they became annoying?
Yeah,
well, like when you go in a place, and my wife and I were just in a store, and everywhere we turned, there they were. Offering, and I know times are hard and they need to sell stuff, but say, you would look great in this. And have you looked at this? This is on sale. And I finally said, you know, excuse me, we really do better when we're allowed to shop on our own. And you tell me where you're going to be standing. When I find something I might be interested in, I'll come and find you. But I promise you're not going to sell us if you follow us around like this. Well, she said, I just thought I was helping. I said, but you're not. And that might work with some people, but it clearly isn't working with me.
Right.
And there is a lot of that actually that goes on, especially in recessionary times. They've told the employees, we got to sell. And to the point,
I was just going to ask you, are they being told that? Do they have to do that?
They think that's service, and really it's just become annoying.
It is. And, you know, people's spidey sense goes off after a while. They know you're desperate, and they don't want to do business with you.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Exactly right.
Well, it really is. It's a shame. So, you know, customer service, I have to tell you my AT&T and Cox communication story because I threatened them.
Tell me.
And now I have to follow through. But for about, let's see, this happened in April. Cox Communications, a company I've been with for a lot of years, enhanced my voicemail system and promptly destroyed my telephone system. I could not get them to fix it. This went on and on and on. And I kept telling them, I'm spending more time on the phone with you and your boss and your supervisor and this person and that person than I am with my own family and my own clients. I don't want this kind of relationship with you. I just want you to fix it. And what I found, Larry, with Cox in particular, is that they didn't read their notes. I'm not convinced that they even took notes because I would get a phone call from somebody, well, Mrs. Griffiths, I understand you're having trouble accessing your voicemail. Have you read the notes? We've gone way beyond that. And they would, let me take a moment here. Really? You called me so you could sit for 8 or 9 or 10 minutes and read the notes that you should have already been on top of? So that was annoying. And finally, when it happened the last, and I told them, you have until 4 o'clock today or I'm going to AT&T. We'll have somebody out there. We'll have somebody out there. Nobody came. Nobody called. Okay. Went to AT&T. That was worse. If you can imagine, that was even worse. Their customer service. Now, Cox Communications, I will tell you, that at least they kind of sort of tried. AT&T could give a rat's patootie, period.
Hmm.
And I'm not, you know, I'm never unpleasant to people. Well, I can't say never. You know, I will go to the very last, and when I know I'm just not going to get what I want out of you, I might say a bad word, but for the most part, I'm reasonable, I'm rational, I'm explaining what the problem is, I'm asking for a result or solution, I'm not insulting you, I'm not impugning your dog, I'm not cursing at you, I'm not threatening to run over your lawn with my car, I'm being very rational and trying to resolve a problem. AT&T, oh my goodness, they could care less. The crowning indignity came, though, when I called again and I said, listen, this problem is still not resolved. I have dial tone. That's it. I can call out. That's it. I don't even know what my phone number is. You guys lost my phone numbers. It really can. They lost my phone numbers, Larry. I now have...
Before they told you your new number?
I didn't... No, and then they said, okay, well, here's your voicemail system. If I called my phone number from my cell phone number, it went to a very nice man's voicemail. They didn't even set up my voicemail. They gave me somebody else's phone number and then another guy's voicemail. It was crazy. I'm not making this up. It was crazy. But what really ticked me off was when I called and I was like, trying to explain one more time. You know, I said, listen, I don't need to speak with you. I need to speak with a supervisor. Let me tell you, you call AT&T and ask to speak to a supervisor, they get nasty.
Yeah.
And I mean nasty. They get, well, why? What? They can't do anything I can't do. And honestly, this happened the last time I was getting ready to speak with you. I was on hold with AT&T just before my radio interview with you. And I kept telling this girl, I need to speak to a supervisor. Well, she's busy. Fine, I'll wait. Really? I'll wait. And she'd come back, you know, every 10 minutes or so. I think she was on an egg timer. Oh, she's still on the phone. She'll have to get back with you. She'll have to call you. Tell me how she's going to call me. I don't have a phone. Well, she's going to have to call you. That was her answer. So finally, about 38 minutes into it, and I needed to jump off and get on the phone with you, she said, I'm transferring you now, and she transfers me to Penske. So Penske answers the phone, and I love this. I said, I'm sorry, who is this? She said, AT&T sent you, didn't they? And I said, yeah, they do it all the time. Apparently, if you ask for a supervisor, you get put on hold for 40 minutes, and then they transfer you to Penske. I was very impressed. I went back to Cox Communications, still lost all. But anyway, and I threatened all of them. I'm telling Larry Winget on you, I have had it.
I bet they were real threatened when you said, I'm sick and Larry Winget on you, right?
I'm telling Larry, because Larry will at least commiserate with me. But I have to say, when I went back to Cox Communications, I got a hold of this really lovely girl. In fact, she's listening today. She goes, oh, God, are you going to really? I said, yes, I am. Okay, but be nice to me. Her name is Flora. She was so sweet. I'm just going to tell you right now, she bent over.
See, that's the way to do it. Be real specific.
Right.
Know who treated you well in the exchange,
that's
and
right.
Know by name who didn't treat you so well.
And she was terrific. She was the only saving grace throughout the whole thing. So, Flora, this one's for you. Oh, my gosh, 8 weeks of this. 8 weeks they had my phone just in cyberspace. 8 weeks. And they could change. Especially AT&T. So those of you guys who are listening, don't ask for a supervisor. Just don't. Unless you want to speak to somebody at Penske. They're very nice.
Well, the good news is that when you make enough noise and you rattle enough cages, that eventually you can get someone's attention. And so it's a shame that it has to come to that.
And I spent hours. I was really getting resentful. I mean, hours. You know, at one point I said, look, this is my retainer rate. You owe me money. You know, at this point, you guys owe me. I'm not paying a bill. Don't even think about sending me a bill. So they didn't.
Well, you know, the point is, you remember that story. You remember all the details of the story. And while it's only been a couple of months, you will forever. Because it had that kind of emotional, dramatic impact on your entire relationship with a company that, you know, frankly, they won a lot of awards for their excellent customer service.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it takes one idiot, one bad experience, one employee who on that day was more wrapped up in their stuff than your stuff can ruin it for that entire company forever. You know, I've had experiences, you know, I'm famous for telling a Radio Shack story. It's my most famous story for 20 years. I had one, but is Radio Shack a bad company? No. Are they all that way? Certainly not. But I had one bad experience with one bozo at one Radio Shack in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 20 years ago. I still tell the story from the stage every time I go on stage. It's my most well-known story. It's been in all my books. And the sad thing is, sorry, but the entire company is going to take the heat of that story, that one exchange, forever. Because, and see, what they don't understand is when they're delivering bad service sometimes, you treat the average guy bad, and he'll go away and keep his mouth shut and just won't come back to that store. He'll just go to another store, or maybe come back when he finds out you're not working and still do business. But you treat someone like you who has a radio show, or me who stands on hundreds of stages and has all these books and they tell the story, we do make a difference. We can tell a lot of people.
Well, you more than me, but I'm mad at them, and I've told you, so I feel so much better. It really was awful. And I told this one girl, I said, I don't think you understand. You're affecting how I do business. I work virtually. I am now operating off of a cell phone. I'm not happy. And I finally told one, AT&T in particular, well, how can we make you a satisfied customer today? Get me a supervisor. Oh, we're really sorry. But they kept saying, oh, I do apologize. And finally I said, and I was talking through my teeth at that point, one more apology, I'm coming through the phone. I don't want an apology. I want a resolution. Please stop doing that. It's useless and it's annoying. Oh, I'm sorry. At that point, I'm standing up, I'm taking deep breaths, and I'm, praying for calm, because I really wanted to strangle somebody. I really physically wanted to harm somebody at that point. Thank God I was alone. Because I'm afraid I would have been hauled in for abuse. It really did get that bad, and I'm normally a very calm, very rational person. At the end of it, I wasn't calm and I wasn't rational. I was ticked. And I'm still ticked.
You
I'm
are.
Like,
I can tell.
This story forever. Can you hear the passion in my voice? It's not good passion at all. But you're right. These stories stick with you. So tell me your Radio Shack story. I'm dying to hear it.
Oh, years ago, I had my boys with me, and really, this was years ago. We walked in, and I realized I need to buy some batteries. And so I see a store in the mall that I know sells batteries, and it's a Radio Shack. I walk in, the battery's on the wall. I walk over the wall, pull the batteries down off the wall, walk up to the counter, put cash on the counter. We're all standing there, and the kid ringing up the transaction says, I'll need your name, address, and telephone number.
No.
And they were famous for that. And I said, no, I'm not going to give you my name, address, and telephone number. And he said, well, why not? And I said, well, I'm paying you cash. I don't have to tell you where I live when I'm paying $1.79 for a package of batteries, paying you cash. And he said, I've got to have your name, address, and telephone number in order to sell you the batteries. And I said, why is it so important? And he said, well, sir, that's our company policy. And I said, well, it's my customer policy that I not do that. So my customer policy basically trumps your company policy, because I'm not telling you my name, address, and telephone number for $1.79 worth of batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, then I don't guess I can sell you the batteries. I said, really?
You've got to be kidding.
I said, do you have a manager? He said, sure, we have a manager. He's in the back. I said, go get the manager. So he comes out with what's easily recognizable to be a manager, a kid about 19, who comes walking out with his finger in my face and stops across the counter and puts his finger in my face and he says, Bud, do you have a problem?
What?
And I said, no, I don't really have a problem. You have batteries and I have money. And in America, we would call that a deal.
Right.
And he tells me, you have to have my name, address, and telephone number. Well, it's not going to happen. You have a company policy, but I have a customer policy. I want you. You're the manager. You tell me why it's so important to get that information. And that's when he told me the second thing no customer ever wants to hear, and that's because that's the way we've always done it. And I said, well, I got good news. I said, I got good news. Today you're going to get a chance to do it different. And so at that point he reaches down, puts his hands on the battery, slides them across the counter, and steps back and says, we're not doing business with you. Now,
really?
You know, at that point, I got one son who's frustrated and ready to go, and my other son is just egging me on. And so he turns around and starts to walk away. I said, excuse me, before you walk away, I want you to stop and think about this a minute. And so he just does. He stops. And I said, you have a customer standing here willing to pay for a product. Cash is on the table, and you're going to walk away and leave that transaction laying here. And let me walk away and buy my batteries somewhere else. So finally he walks back over in several seconds. I mean, 30 seconds has gone by with him just standing there looking at me. He walks over and he starts to type on the computer, turns around, takes the batteries, drops them in the bag, takes my money, puts it in the drawer, hands me a little bit of change, and he hands it all, pulls a receipt out of the computer, hands it all to me and says, "There you go, sir. Thank you very much." I figured it all out. I said, "Now, what did you figure out?" And he said, "Well, I just put in my name, address, and telephone number on your receipt." Not much of a brain surgeon there. He's got an unhappy customer walking out the front door of his business, but now I've got his name, his address, and his telephone number. And what I always talk about when I tell the story is that, sadly, he did exactly as he had been trained to do.
Right.
And that's where we're making our mistakes in business today. He did exactly as he had been trained to do. He did nothing wrong as far as the company was concerned. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to get the name, address, and telephone number, and that's what he went after. And the sad part really is, and I told that story for 10 years, and finally did get a call from Radio Shack many, many years later.
You did.
Yeah, and telling the
Please
story.
Please tell that story.
Yeah, and they said, "Mr. Winger, we understand you've been going around telling a story about us." And I said, "Well, yes, I have. I really appreciate it. It's become my most well-known story. I've told it to probably, over a million people." And they said, we want you to know that our number one way that we stay in touch with our customers and all that is by finding out their name, address, and telephone number. I said, "Well, how nice for you." And he said, "But also our number one customer complaint is the fact that we ask for name, address, and telephone number." I said, "I'd probably call that a clue, wouldn't you?"
Yeah, you reckon?
And he said, "Well, we also want you to know that because of you, we've had to stop doing that because you've just told too many people, and it has made a difference." So they actually stopped. I got this letter. They stopped asking for the full name, address, and telephone number. I think now they just do zip code or something.
Right.
They stopped actually that practice because I had told so many people the story. I'd put it in a New York Times bestselling book and stood on stage and I had it out on all the CDs and DVDs and recordings and everywhere that if one person complains long enough and loud enough, they can make a difference.
Well, exactly, and I'm so glad you shared that story because, I mean, it's a brilliant illustration of what people are doing wrong in business. Office Depot does that. I'll go in there, I'll grab some office supplies, I'll say, "We need your telephone number." "No, you don't." "Oh, yeah, we do." "No, you don't. Make something up." And one girl argued with me. She said, "I really need a telephone number." I said, "Fine, 1-800-HELP-ME-GOD. She typed it in and she said, "Larry, I promise you this happened about 3 or 4 months ago. I've been on a streak lately." This girl types it in, you know, completely devoid of any emotion. She goes, "There's one too many digits." "You think?" She didn't even know that I was pulling her leg. I said, "Put your own phone number in there. You're not getting my information. I don't owe it to you." "Well, we need it." And she did. She knew the word demographics. Somebody had told her that.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Well, I need it for the demographics." I said, "How's this? I'm in this store. This is the town. This is the state. Write it down." Poor girl.
Yeah, I used to say when they would ask for that, and this was way back when I worked, and they started that practice long ago, I would say, when they'd say, "What's your phone number?" And I worked for the phone company at the time, I'd say 0. And they said, "What do you mean 0? I said, "Well, I work for AT&T, so when you dial 0, you're pretty much always going to get AT&T. That's where I work. Just write 0. And they didn't understand that, but that's all I'd ever give them. I said, "Really, that's my work number, 0.
Zero. Well, this poor little girl argued and argued, and the guy standing behind me, we kind of walked out at the same time, and he looked at me and he goes, "That was brilliant." I said, "Thank you." And we parted ways and went to our own cars.
Well, there you go.
It's just too intrusive. So, you know, anybody wants your phone number? It's 1-800-HELP-ME-GOD. And say it with a perfect
straight
face. I
may use that.
You're welcome to it. Poor little girl. I mean, she was doing, like you said, exactly what she was told to do, and she didn't understand why I wasn't willing to go along with it. And I tried to explain, it's none of your business what my
number is. Well, and really, like you just said, poor little girl. That's a bad boss that didn't explain how to didn't teach her how to explain that to a customer, the need for it and so forth, and the thinking behind it, and to quickly say, it's okay if you don't want to give it, that's fine.
Exactly.
And most stores, you know, I shop a lot at Cabela's. I like Cabela's. I'm one of those outdoorsy kind of guys that likes the the guns and the bows and arrows and hunting equipment and all that. And they have the same thing. They say, can we have your phone number? And I say, I'd rather not. And they always ask, and then they always quickly say, that's all right, sir. It's not a problem at all. And then they just put declined. Perfect.
Exactly.
I'm happy with that. Give me, make it my option. I'll share it if I want. I won't share it.
And I was trying to tell this little girl, my number's unlisted. I'm not going to stand here and state it in open air. It is an unlisted number. I have it that way for a reason. I pay for it, not giving it to you. She just could not comprehend. And she also didn't have the mental acuity to say, well, you know, I'll type in a fake number or I'll type in my own number. She just really wanted to argue with me about it.
Yeah, well, that's bad training on her part. And really, that sort of is the emphasis of hopefully of what we've talked about here this entire time, is that you have to teach your employees. They're not going to be raised right. I'm way past that. I'd like for everybody to be raised right with common sense and courtesy and just how to be polite and all of those things. But it's not going to happen. The sad news is there are a lot of kids who never learned that stuff that are in the workplace, and now it's up to their managers to say, look, we're in business to be profitable. We're profitable because we treat people well. It's their money. They have the money. We have to be nice to get them to share it. The customer really it deserves to be treated well. And when we teach that to our employees and then really manage toward that one central idea and then impose consequences when it's not done, that's when we can slowly turn things around. That's what you do as a business. Then from a customer standpoint, you realize you have taught that company and that employee it's okay to treat you that way if you take it. And I just, get-go, teach the people who I do business with, they don't get to treat me that way. As the customer, when I'm spending my money, it's on my terms. And that's how I explain it to people who do business with me. I was just doing business, so I had to have my garage doors adjusted, and I called a garage door guy, and we were going through the whole thing, and we set the appointment, and I said, you pick any appointment you want. That entire day is good for me. I will be home. Pick a time. But understand, when you pick the time, you have to be there on time. So I have no input into this. I'm not going to tell you 10 o'clock would be good for me. You pick any time, but you be there when you say you're going to be there. And he goes, what? And I said, no, just pick it. So tell me 2 o'clock, but you be here at 2 o'clock or we're going to have a problem. He said, you're going to be too much trouble to get along with as a customer. I said, really?
He did not.
Yeah. I said, so I'm now going to be the bad guy because I'm leaving the entire day open for you to show up on time. Anytime you want, just don't be late and don't stand me up. That's it. So I'm asking. You pick it. And I'm the bad guy for that? And he said, yep, I can tell when a customer's going to be too much trouble. You need to call somebody else. I said, you're right, I do. Thank you so much for getting that worked out with me now.
Wow.
And that's what I started doing with that entire service industry. You pick a time, just don't be late.
And I agree.
Because when you do that, you're the bad guy.
I know. When I set appointments, I give people, I say, give me a range of days and times. I'll let you know which one works for me. We'll agree on that, but I'm like, you don't be late. If you're not punctual and you call me 10 minutes late, I've moved on to something else and I will not pick up that phone. Yeah, it's so disrespectful. It really is. I mean, if you're willing to waste my time like that, chances are you're really bad with your own time and I can't deal with it.
I've told them before, too, if you don't respect my time enough to show up, when you say you're going to show up, you're probably not going to do a good job while you're here anyway.
Yeah,
think, well, how are those related? Oh, trust me, buddy, they're related.
Well, they are. It's a character issue. Larry, where can people find you on the web?
You know, Larry Wingett, W-I-N-G-E-T, LarryWingett.com tells them more than they're ever going to want to know about me. Stay tuned. I got my book, Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life, is being released at the end of this month, end of July now, in the new second revised edition, which is a total rewrite of the book. It's out in comic book now. We're working on a new Larry Wingett app for the iPhone and the iPad, which will be released in about 8 weeks. So there's going to be lots of ways to hear what I have to say on any variety of topics. Then they can always find me on Facebook at the Larry Wingate fan page, where I rant every day. So
I know. I'm there with you.
And you make lots of comments, and I appreciate it.
I do. One thing I wanted to ask you, because I download your books on Audible. I mean, I have them in book form.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm working, which is all the time because I'm an unabashed workaholic, I like to listen to them as well, and particularly when they're in your voice. If there's somebody else's voice, I don't want to hear them. Just an aside there. I want your voice. But one thing I wanted to ask you is on Audible, will the new version be available on Audible anytime soon?
Shut Up, Stop Whining is not going to come out on Audible. They sold the audio rights. That was my publisher wisely sold those audio rights. So that's the only book I have that it has not been recorded in my own voice. All of my books, I did the audio on them, except for Shut Up, Stop Whining, which probably is the reason that that's the worst-selling audio book of all my books. Because it's not in my voice. See, you're
right.
Very discerning customer there. Because I do think it loses something. So right now there's no current plan to redo Shut Up, Stop Whining on audio. But read it.
Yeah. I will buy the new version of it then. What are you doing for the 4th of July? What plans do you have? And let's talk a little bit while I've got you on the phone about how great America is and how we we really need to be a lot more patriotic than we are, my opinion. Just give me your thoughts on the 4th of July weekend.
4th of July, what I'm personally doing is I'm going to try to stay a little cool. I'll spend a little time in the swimming pool trying to cool off, but we're not having a big event with our family and so forth. My boys are doing their own thing with their own families for the first time. So it'll be the first time it's just my wife and I sitting here trying to stay cool. I do think the whole thing behind the 4th of July, though, is something that we ought to take seriously. These days we don't have fireworks displays like we used to sort of remind us of the Star Spangled Banner and then the bombs bursting in air and those sorts of things that we had when we were kids and big family picnics. They don't do that quite as much as when I was a boy. So I think that instead we go to YouTube and we look at that stuff. And, I guess one of the ways that we remind people is to just go ahead and play into the new electronic age. I post a song of the week every week, and this week my song of the week will be a patriotic song of the week, just to remind folks of what it's really about. And so anybody that's on YouTube or Facebook or sharing with social media, that's my suggestion. Go in and pick something patriotic that speaks to you and your heritage and your family and how you feel about the country, and post that just as a reminder. Also, I'm a big believer you fly the flag outside your house. And, they don't cost much. You can buy one with a pole and everything at Home Depot for less than $10. Go get a flag and fly it.
Well, when I was a kid, everybody put out bunting. Remember the bunting, the drape?
Yeah.
You don't see that? I have some. It's in my garage. I'm putting it up today. I'll be the only person.
I don't think people even know what bunting is anymore. They don't know what crepe paper is.
There is that. But I do miss the trappings of the 4th of July and people heading outside with their picnic baskets and, not necessarily grilling. Things have changed. And, this is the time of year I start getting a little bit nostalgic for things that happened during my childhood. 4th of July was always a huge deal. The fireworks. And now, not so much. It's a shame, and I really do miss the good old days, if you will.
Yeah, I do too. Now they think you're going to blow your fingers off, and yet
I don't know
of one kid that blew his fingers off with fireworks when I was a kid. I mean, I think it was all just this old wives' tale and a rumor, and now we've become way too concerned about a lot of that. And in Arizona, it's an issue for us because we have so much fire danger right now, so there's not going to be many fireworks going on. They made it legal to sell them, but just not legal to fire them off, which I not really.
Tax revenue.
For the first year, you can sell them everywhere. You just can't fire them anywhere. So I'm not sure what it's going to do. I hope you like owning them.
I know. Well, I will tell you from experience, they don't hold over well, so you need to fire them.
You need to go ahead and use them, huh?
You do. You need to go to the next state or something. But here, unfortunately, they have these fireworks tents everywhere. You can buy them all the time.
Yeah.
And for the next weekend, my neighbors will be scaring me and the cats half to death. But Because you'll be sitting here, be quiet, and all of a sudden, boom, it's fun. I go out and watch them, but it's not the same as having one huge, glorious fireworks display that, you know, the whole town kind of gathers around.
Yeah, we've lost that town square, small town mentality of everybody bringing their picnic baskets and doing that. So, so if that's the way it's going to be, and it looks like it's going to be, at least remind people of what it means and what it means to you, and go ahead and use social media to say, this is what I miss and this is what I enjoy, and everybody take a minute.
There you go. Well, we are out of time, and I'm so grateful that you were here with me to start the 4th of July weekend off properly.
I appreciate it. It's been fun. Always is fun.
I know. I love chatting with you. I just, you know, after a while I'm going, but I have more to say. I have more to say, and we're out of time every single time. I have more questions. Wait, don't go. But anyway, you know, hopefully we'll get you to come back again soon, and I would love to chat with you when your book comes out again.
Sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for being here, and the show will be available for download in about an hour. This is Denise Griffiths and Larry Wingate wishing you a happy and a safe 4th of July weekend, and I'll see you next week. Happy 4th, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.